Hello Greg, this is Dennis here, and today is Thursday the 6th of May 1993, and although I'm cutting this tape on this date, I won't send it to you until you get back from the USA, because you've got enough on your plate at the moment, so I'll delay sending it to you until I'm sure you're back. Now this tape is the fourth, and I assure you the final tape, of background material for level 5 of my technology. It's the fourth and final, and it's an addition to the one on the background material, which was my reply on the subject of unstacking, and it was also in addition to the one I sent you on the subject of dissociation, and it's an addition to the recent one I sent you, in which covers the subject of exclusion postulates and so forth, the recent one, which was just a few weeks ago. So it's a total of four in all, Greg, that in addition to the level 5 material. Whether you issue them as separate to the original write-up, or whether you somehow add it as an addendum to the original write-up is entirely up to you. I don't mind actually either way. It's background material, that's all. It's simply expansion, background material. The level 5 as it stands, as I've given it to you, is sufficient. It's all there. But these four tapes would help a person doing level 5. Levels 1 to 4 are quite okay, they don't need any expansion. But level 5, this background material would help. These four tapes would help a person doing the background material on level 5. So I leave it entirely up to you whether you, the way in which you issue it. I suppose if pushed, my preference would be that it would be issued as a separate material. It's just background material to level 5 of the technology. Now there's two things I want to take up on this tape. First is the subject of ionization. Now almost everyone who's done any high school physics is familiar with the subject of ionization, and anyone who switched on a strip bulb is also familiar with a practical application of the subject of ionization. Just briefly, in this universe, in the physical universe, that a gas, if you pass a positive electric charge through a gas, the gas tends to ionize, the molecules are ionized positively, and some, I don't know which ones, but some of these elements, when so ionized, will glow. And neon, for example, the inert gases, neon glows a yellowy-orange colour. Some glow green, some glow a whitey colour, or some a reddy colour. And this is the basis of strip lighting. They simply, to make a strip light, they simply evacuate the air out of the bulb, put in an inert gas, which they know will ionise, and then they coat the inside of the tube with something which is sensitive to the, and will amplify the ionisation effect. And the overall effect is that they get a 40-watt strip lighting. It's the principle is ionization. Anyway, that's the principle in electricity, in the physical universe, of ionization. Now, I'm using the word term to explain a principle which will show up at level 5 and will puzzle a person unless they know what is going on. The subject of ionization occurs when a person, usually in the grades of OT, starts to put postulates into mass in the universe. Whether he's putting postulates in the mass of the universe, physical universe in present time, or whether he's putting postulates into the mass of the universe in the past, or whether he's putting it into the mass of his pictures, it doesn't make any difference. When he starts putting postulates into mass, this phenomenon of ionization will occur, and it's a useful one to be familiar with. Now this is the way it works, that as soon as you put any postulate into a mass, into any mass, you're going to trigger this subject of ionization. Now, the rules of ionisation, as far as postulates are concerned, are very, very straightforward and very, very simple, and I'll give them to you so that you know what to expect when the phenomenon shows up. First of all, let's consider any erasable goals package. Let's take the to-know goals package, the basic goals package, to-know, but it is applicable to any erasable goals package. All erasable goals packages have two positive legs. And say, in the example of to-know goals package, the two positive legs are to-know and to-be-known. Now, if you put those postulates, either one of those two postulates, into mass, the mass will ionise either white or coloured. The usual ionisation colour is white, or it may be a creamy colour or a yellowy colour. The mass will actually go white, or go yellow or creamy, or it may go coloured, any colour of the rainbow, but that's very uncommon. The most common effect is white or cream for the two positive legs. And the two negative legs of the to know goals package, that's to not know and to not be known, the mass will go black, will ionise black. Now, that is true for the to know goals package, and it's true for any erasable goal package. It's true for any erasable goals package. So immediately, ionisation gives us another test for an erasable goals package. To take a goal, we already have an old test for an erasable goals package. Is the to blank leg of the goal opposed to the to be known leg of the basic package? If the to blank leg of the goal being tested, positive to blank leg, is opposed to the to be known leg of the basic to know goals package, then the goal is unerasable. Example, the goal to destroy. Well, the goal to destroy is obviously opposed to the goal to be known. If somebody's trying to be known, well, if somebody comes along and tries to destroy them, they're obviously opposed to their postulate to be known. So the goal to destroy cannot be formulated into an erasable goals package. That's our old and original test. And it's a very valid test. It's a test that you should always undertake. You should always undertake that test. But I'll give you the full list of the tests for an erasable, unerasable goals package. So we can add to that one. We can add now the subject of ionisation. We simply put the two positive legs of the goals package to be tested. The to blank and to be blank legs of the package to be tested. We put the postulates into mass in the environment and see what happens. If it ionises white or coloured, then it's erasable. If it ionises black, it's unerasable. So the difference between an erasable goals package and an unerasable goals package in terms of ionisation is that an erasable goals package, the two positive legs will ionise mass white or coloured, and the two negative legs will ionise the mass black. Whereas a non-erasable goals package, all four legs of the goals package ionise the mass black. So there's the test. It's a very, very simple test. Unfortunately, it can't be used much early on in therapy. A person has to come up the line a bit and get very, very familiar with putting postulates into mass before the ionisation effect begins to show up in any detail. So it's a later on test. Unfortunately, it can't be used much with any sensitivity early on. But nevertheless, it's a valid test. So to finish off the subject of ionisation, this brief look at ionisation, I'll give you the four tests of an unerasable goals package. It's very vital to determine whether a goals package, a junior goals package, is erasable or unerasable. If you can determine it before you play with it in therapy, you can save yourself a lot of heartache, a lot of apathy, a lot of misery and a lot of upset, because playing, trying to erase unerasable goals packages is murder. It is blue murder, I can assure you. So it's very important that we have a whole battery of tests we can back up, so we can be absolutely sure from the very outset that a goals package, any goals package we wish to test, we can find out immediately whether it's erasable or unerasable. So the first test is, if it's unerasable, the positive to blank goal is opposed to the to be known leg of the basic package. That is our first test, and that's our most, still our most important test. That's the one you should always try first. It's an obvious test, so that was the one you do first. That's the first one. Now the second one is the two positive legs of the Gold's package to be tested ionizes mass black. If the two positive legs of the Gold's package you're testing, the Gold's package you're testing ionized mass black, then it's an unerasable Gold's package. Now there's a third test, which is an awful test, but it is a test. It's a final test. Well, it's not final. There's one more, actually. There's four altogether, but the third one is an awful one. The Gold's package is unerasable if you get a black field, a rising tone arm, and much apathy with no relief when you try to erase the Gold's package. I'll give it to you again. You get a black field, a rising tone arm, much apathy with no relief. Get that? That's important. No relief. With no relief when you try and erase the Gold's package in therapy. And if you do this, the cure for this state of affairs, the only cure for the apathy and the black field and the rising tone arm, the only cure is to re-null the to-no Gold's package at level 5A. That's the only cure, is to re-null the to-no Gold's package at level 5A. And all the unwanted symptoms will vanish by magic if you do that. One of the magics of the basic to-no Gold's package. Now there's a fourth one. There's a class of Gold's which are called Gaines Gold's. They're called Gaines Gold's. Now a Gaines Gold has no meaning outside of games play. That is the definition, it's a technical definition of a Gaines Gold. An example of a Gaines Gold is to win, or to exploit, to play. Quite clearly the goal to win has no meaning outside of gameplay. The goal to exploit has no meaning outside of gameplay. The goal to play has no meaning outside of games play. You see that? So that's the technical definition. They're games goals. Now, the datum is that all games goals are unerasable. They're unerasable. The reason why they're unerasable, because the games goal has no meaning outside of games play, it has no complementary postulates, and therefore it won't erase. So it has no meaning outside of games play. A game, you see, it consists of conflicting postulates. And if a goal has no meaning outside of games play, then it only consists of conflicting postulates, and it has no complementary postulate. Therefore, it will not erase in therapy. It cannot erase in therapy, because it has no complementary postulates in the set. For example, it's what we call, technically, a games goal has a one game class postulate set. Let's take the goal to exploit, and I'll show you what I mean by this. If we take the goal to exploit, well, the goal to exploit, the only class in the set that is active in the goals package is to exploit versus to not be exploited. When you look at the game of exploitation, it's always that. That's the only game that's played in the set, is to exploit. Somebody's an exploiter, and he's trying to exploit somebody else who doesn't want to be exploited. So it's to exploit versus to not be exploited. And that's the only class in the set. Nobody's going around saying to both exploit and to be exploited. Nobody's going around wanting to be exploited and being opposed by somebody who doesn't want to exploit them. Nobody's going around not wanting to be exploited and somebody over there who doesn't want to exploit them. These are all null classes in the set. The only class that has any meaning in the set of a games goal, in the goal to exploit as the example, is the goal to exploit versus to not be exploited. So it's a one games class postulate set. It's one games class goal set. And that is a games class, and so there's no complementary postulates. So the games goals will not erase in therapy. They are unerasable. the game's goals are rather insidious. They're very insidious. It took me a while to puzzle them out. I got caught on game's goals when I was researching this material. They won't erase. They show all the effects of unerase ability. You get the apathy. You get the rising TA, rising tone arm. You get the black field and so forth. But they don't apparently oppose the goal that the two blank leg of the goal doesn't apparently oppose the to be known leg of the basic package. And they don't obviously obey the ionization rule. Like, you can get the goal to play, for example, and you can put that goal out to play, to be played, and you'll find that they don't obviously ionize black when you put their goals into ionized mass with the goal. So they tend to pass the ionization test. But once you spot that they're a game's goal, you avoid them like the plague. They're certainly unerasable. There's no way in the world you can erase a game's goal in therapy. It's because it's got no meaning outside of games play. It's simply a goal which is a part of games play. And because it's got no meaning outside of games play, it's unerasable. Because it's got no complementary postulates in its set. Follow? So games goal, that's the four. So there's the four tests of an unerasable goal. It's opposed to the opposition test, being first one, opposed to the known leg of the basic package, the ionization test, all four legs of the unerasable goals package ionizes mass black, and the third one, you get a black field, rising TA, apathy, with no release when you try and erase the goals package. That's the third one. And the fourth one, unerasable goals package, it's a games goal. And these are the only four. There aren't any other. You've got all of them there now. I know of no others. There's the four. For the use of those four criteria, you can sort out whether any goal is erasable. I mean, obviously the list is complete, because if you're completely uncertain, the final thing to do is to simply test the goal, try and erase it. And if it starts to kill you, it's unerasable, and there's no relief. Your tone arm goes up if you're using a meter, or your field goes black, and you get lots of apathy, and tone arm goes up, and so forth, and no relief. Well, it's obviously an unerasable goal. That's the final test. It's a pretty awful test to have to make, but it is a test. So we can test them all. I mean, within that four, we can test any of them. We'll always come up with a positive answer, one way or the other. We can find out whether a goal is erasable. Okay, so much for... There's a lot more to the subject of ionization, but that's its immediate application to level five. That's its immediate practical application to level five, is the subject of testing for an erasable or unerasable junior goals package. My final words on the subject of junior goals package is stay with the list that I've given you. You have a list of the most important junior goals packages. There's only a dozen or so of them, and you have them, plus the goal to reason. That's an important one and should be added to the list. Outside of that list that I've given you, there's probably another 20 or so, 15 or 20, that can be found, which are erasable. But they're of minor importance, and they will all come to light on the list that I've given you. So fiddling around, looking for obscure, erasable junior goals, and hoping that will provide salvation for you, is really one way to waste time in therapy. The key goal is the goal to know at level 5A. Concentrate on that, and then when that goes null on you and you can't get any more change out of that, then go on to level 5B and work on the list that I've given you. And then go on to level 5C, call it a day. Don't spend hours and hours fiddling around chasing up obscure goals, junior goals packages, and testing them for erasability. It's a complete waste of time. I've given you all the important ones, the to know goals package and the important junior packages. All the rest are quite trivial anyway, so you really don't have to do any searching at all, because I've given you the data. Well, over the remainder of this tape, I want to take up the subject of bodily goals packages. They do have some importance in therapy. You will find them on my list of junior goals packages. There are two of them. There's the goal to eat and the goal to sex. The human spirit shares these goals with the subject of the body. The body is active on both those goals packages. And so they do need a little bit of amplification, those two goals packages do. The easiest of the two to erase is the goal to eat. That is really a breeze. Unless the person has a lot of specific psychological difficulties on the subject of eating, and that's only a minority of the population, and these people know who they are if they have eating problems. I don't mean things like indigestion, I mean definite psychological problems. You know, I mean, if a person overeating or compulsively eating or compulsively starving, if they're doing either of those things, well, they've got a specific eating problem, and the goal to eat will be a specific cure for their condition. But this is a minority of the population. The majority of the population, the goal to eat, although it's shared between the human spirit and the body, they both share this goal, and the goal is erasable. It's a very easy one to erase. Now, why is it a very easy? Why is the goal to eat a very easy goal to erase? Because, and here's the key datum, because games play in the to eat goals package is not completely compulsive. It's not completely compulsive. The human body normally, most of the time, operates on the basis of must eat and mustn't be eaten. That is its most common class it sits in, is it must eat and it mustn't be eaten. So that's one class in the set. But the other class in the set, mustn't eat and must be eaten, the human body can just get into that class. So that class is available to the human body. And so it can occupy those classes, and also it can occupy the classes of to eat and to be eaten and to not eat and to not be eaten. In other words, the human body can just occupy all four classes in the set. And so the set is not complete, games play is not completely compulsive. The key is that the human body can just tolerate being eaten. It can only just barely tolerate it. It doesn't like being eaten, but it can just barely tolerate it. And because it can just tolerate it, the goals package to eat is fairly readily erasable. It doesn't pose any great difficulties to the average person. It will only pose difficulties to a person who has psychological difficulties on the subject of eating. That person can expect to have a ball erasing the to eat goals package. So when I say the human body has some slight tolerance to be eaten but doesn't care for it, I'll give you an example of that, is that even a tiny thing like a mosquito bite or a gnat bite, which is a tiny insect, you know, a very, very tiny insect, taking a little tiny bite out of the human body, the body's response to that is enormous. It simply doesn't like having even little bits nibbled off of it by other life forms. But it can survive it. You know, it doesn't completely go into apathy and die when somebody tries to eat it. So it does have some slight tolerance of being eaten, but it doesn't like it one little bit. But nevertheless, it can tolerate being eaten to some slight degree. So that's its saving grace on the subject of eating, and it allows the to-eat goals package for the majority of the population to be fairly readily erasable. And it's no great deal, the to-eat goals package. It erases rather readily, and it's not particularly therapeutic. But it will be highly therapeutic to those people who have specific eating problems. Either they're compulsive eaters or compulsive starvers, and they will have a ball, as I say, on the to eat goals package. Okay, so I'll give you the main strategy of the eating game. that all life forms use. This is the main strategy they all use. The whole idea of winning the eating game, how to win the eating game and so forth, the inner secret of the inner secret of the inner secret, is to try and convince your opponent that you're inedible, that you can't be eaten. If you can convince your opponent that you can't be eaten, you've won the eating game. And that is the main strategy of life forms, is to go around and convince other life forms that they can't be eaten, and they're inedible. If you can do that, you won the eating game. It's a pretty miserable game, but there it is. That's the main strategy. You find plants doing this, you know, they fill themselves up with rather poisonous chemicals, and along comes an animal and takes a nibble at the plant, and the animal goes away and gets a tummy ache, and the animal reckons, well, I won't eat that plant again, and the plant says, ha ha, I've now convinced that animal that I'm inedible, you see, and so the animal won't eat him anymore. So there it is, he's won his eating game. So that's the main game strategy in the eating game, is to convince the opponent that you're inedible. And really, it's a very, very simple game. It's a very almost naive game, the eating game is, because that's its only strategy. Okay, so much for the to eat goals package. Now we come to the to sex goals package, and I wish I could say the same thing for the to sex goals package, because it's a very, very it's a bodily goals package. The spirit, the human spirit, shares this goals package with the human body, and the two jog along there, and you think, oh well, the to eat goals package is a bit of a breeze. We just hope that the sex goals package is a bit of a breeze. Well, the average human being, when he walks into the sex goals package, he will walk into a brick wall. He will go ka-thunk, thud, flamp, and he'll end up flat on his face. So I do really need to give you some background data on the to sex goals package. I've had to wrestle this data out the hard way. Really, I have. I mean, it's been a slugging match getting this data out and finding out there's an awful lot of significance to the subject of sex in human beings. Put it this way, if there was a malevolent god who knew all about goals and goals packages and was sitting up on high and looked down on earth and saw all those human beings, and he with malice aforethought, he decided to make the subject of sex absolutely unerasable for human beings psychologically, he couldn't have done a better job of it than the way it is. He couldn't have done a better job. It is virtually unerasable, except with a highly specialised technology such as we have here at Level 5. Level 5 will get this goals package apart. It will get it apart. But I can assure you, there's nothing else will get it apart. There's nothing I know of. Freudian psychotherapy won't get it apart. Scientology won't get it apart. Dianetics won't get it apart. Hypnosis won't get it apart. I know of no other psychotherapy or any form of psychological approach that will clean up this subject of sex out of the human mind and completely relax the human being on the subject of sex, except this technology that I have. So that's the position on the subject of sex. It's a nightmare, but you pick your way through, and unless you know what you're doing, you're going to fall flat on your face. Now, the reason that it's a nightmare, the basic fundamental reason that the sex goals package is a nightmare, is simply because the human body has adopted gender specialization. Human beings are born either as males or as females. They are not born as both, and they are not born as neither. Therefore, as far as the human body is concerned, the sex goals package is a compulsive games play. Games play in the sex goals package is totally compulsive as far as the human body is concerned. That's very useful to give some background material on the subject of sex and to see how it got into existence in the universe, because this will give a person some idea of what they're up against. Very, very fundamental life forms like bacteria, viruses, etc., they don't use sex as a means of reproduction. They reproduce asexually, and they do this by cell splitting. The bacterium, when it wants to reproduce, it simply splits itself into two bacterium, and the two go their separate ways. and this is the same for viruses and the same for these little creatures you see, paramecia and so forth, you see floating around in a pond, and which you can see under a microscope if you care to look at a drop of pond water that's full of little single cell creatures, amoeba and so forth. They all reproduce asexually by cell splitting. Now, the cell splitting is reproduction of cloning. It's cloning. In other words, as far as the biological traits, genetic traits, the offspring is exactly the same. It's a clone of its parent. It's exactly the same as the person. In other words, if a bacterium splits in half, the two halves, biologically and genetically speaking, in terms of their DNA and so forth, are completely identical. There's no difference at all. And evidently for a long while in the universe this went on. It still goes on, but as life forms became more complicated, more complex, there was a move, an urge in life forms towards a more comprehensive way of reproduction, something which allowed them to get more data, you might say, in their genetic structure. And so the subject of sex came into operation. And essentially the system is very, very simple, that you get two members of the species. One will, they both contribute a cell, and each cell they contribute contains half their genetic material, and is representative of their genetic material, and the other being contributes a single cell, which represents their genetic material, and the two cells combine and grows up and becomes a separate individual, and it shares the genetic material of both of their parents. There, you might say the two beings give birth to the other creature. And this worked better. It does work for as far as survival is concerned. It does allow, because it allows more variation of genetic material, it did allow these primitive creatures to survive better. But nevertheless, the old cell splitting of single cell creatures still goes on. You can see it in any pond, you can see it under any microscope. If you care to get a decent microscope and have a look, you'll see it going on. You can sit and watch it happen. I've sat and watched it happen in a drop of pond water. You can see these little single cell creatures splitting. Now, the earliest life forms, the earliest attempts along this line was that the two cells that were contributed became a male cell and a female cell, and early on there was very little difference between the two cells, but finally the female cell became larger and more complex, and as the female body became more and more looked after the growing cell before birth, you might say, so that the female cell became larger and the male cell became very rudimentary, became the very rudimentary sperm, and then the but in the earliest creatures we find that that the male and female, that any creature could be both male and female. Now these are known as the bisexual creatures. There's plenty of them about still on the planet today. You'll find them. There's bisexual creatures. They are both male and female. Many trees are both male and female. And although they can't, their male cells can't fertilize their own female cells. They've got some provision in their genetic code which prevents this from happening. They can be fertilized, their male cells can be fertilized by female cells of the same type of tree, but providing it's another tree, and their male cells can also fertilize another female cell of the same type of tree. So the creature gets a double advantage. It gets a double advantage there by being both male and female. It can reproduce in two ways, you might say. Earthworms are also bisexual. They call them also known as hermaphrodites. That's the other word from the Greek root for hermaphrodites. They're bisexual hermaphrodites. They're both male and female. In other words, two earthworms can meet up, and they can both um, they can both, they're both, each creature is both a male and a female, and the male part of an earthworm can join up sexually with the female half of another earthworm, and at the same time its own female half can be joined up with the male half of another earthworm, and so it can both of them are quite capable of laying eggs and fertilizing a female sperm, a female egg, and having their own female eggs fertilized. So they're both capable of fertilizing and being fertilized. Bisexual, very common bisexual creatures. But as games play became more and more compulsive on the same subject of sex in the universe, and this is the only reason why it came about, the games play became more and more compulsive, became more and more important, the subject did, that eventually the creatures split off and no longer were bisexual, and they began to adopt gender specialisation. You'll find even trees, for example, some trees are bisexual and other trees are male trees and other trees are female trees, and some trees have adopted gender specialisation, and certainly most higher level creatures have, reptiles and so forth, and mammals and man, all the higher birds, they've all adopted gender specialisation to a greater or a lesser degree. Amongst some birds, they can become male and female. You know, if they lose a male in their tribe, one of the females becomes a male. They've got all sorts of peculiar mating habits some creatures have, but the tendency as evolution progresses is towards more and more gender specialisation, and the peak is reached in mankind with his complete gender specialisation, where he's either a male or a female. Now, before we go any further, we must take a very close look at this subject of masculinity and femininity. These are little junior universes, masculinity and femininity. They're junior universes. Now, the junior universe of masculinity has an anatomy. The junior universe of masculinity only consists of the postulate to sex and the postulate to not sex. And the junior universe of femininity only consists of the postulate to be sexed and the postulate to not be sexed. Now, that is about as fundamental as you can get on the subject of masculinity and femininity. They are the basic postulates that govern masculinity, femininity. Masculinity consists of the to sex and the to not sex postulate. Femininity consists of the to be sexed and the to not be sexed postulate. So that completely, that those junior universes consist entirely of those postulates. Remember, I said that this whole universe in which we live only consists of life and postulates. So it's no surprise to us that the subject of masculinity in its final anatomy would only consist of postulates, and they are the postulates. There's nothing else there. Basically, there's nothing else there. It will take you a long time to get to that amount of reduction, but I can assure you that I've worked it through, and that is the reduction, and that is the junior universe of masculinity, and that is the junior universe of femininity. They are the postulates that those junior universes consist of. And armed with that data, you can take the to sex goals package apart. Without that data, you won't get it apart. You need that datum to get it apart. That's the key data. That you might say is the inner secret of the inner secret. The anatomy of masculinity, the postulate anatomy of masculinity, and the postulate anatomy of femininity. Given that, once you've got that, then it all starts to make sense. Before we press on, I'd like to mention one of the more curious things about the subject of sex in the English language. That in English, the word sex is a noun. It is not a verb. So this means in English we have no verb on the subject of sexual intercourse, for example. We can't use the verb to sex. It's not strictly the use of English, because sex, the word sex, is a noun. It is not a verb. So So when we use the set goals package, I'm using it slightly not in accordance with the English language. The Anglo-Saxons had a verb to sex. They called it the verb to fuck. That's Anglo-Saxon. But evidently the English are far too genteel to have a verb of that nature. That sex is a noun. It's not something that is done. Sex isn't. It's something which exists. You see, it somehow comes into exists spontaneously. I'm being funny. I'm being sarcastic. It's most peculiar. It's some languages in the world have sex. The word sex is a noun and a verb. Well, certainly we're using it in therapy. That the verb is the word sex is a noun and a verb. I'm using it in that context as a noun and a verb. So to sex is a verb. I'm using it as a verb. In other words, I'm verbalizing the noun, which is a very, very common thing to do. It's not an unknown thing to do in the English language, and I'm doing it for our purposes. So I'm using it here. So language purists, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to get into complicated verbs like to inseminate or to procreate, none of which mean exactly the same as to sex. If you don't like the word to sex, then use the word to fuck. And that means exactly the same as to sex, it does. It's the old Anglo-Saxon, but it's a swear word in our language, so even that's not acceptable. So we're going to use to sex. Okay, I'm going to switch this tape over now to the other side. There we are, back again. Side two, same date. Now, another curious thing about our English language on the subject of sex is the word gender. The word gender is not supposed to be used in terms of masculinity and femininity as applied to people. It's only supposed to be used in terms of words of a feminine nature and so forth. In other words, it's a literary term. It's a grammatical term. The word gender is, strictly speaking, a grammatical term. You couldn't really say that a man is a male gender or female is female gender. That is not strictly the correct use of the language. But nevertheless, I'm going to use it in that sense, to hell with the language purists. If I use the word gender, I mean it strictly in the physical sense of masculinity, male gender, female gender, in terms of human beings and human bodies. One is almost led to the inescapable conclusion that the people who put the English language together were very, very repressed on the subject of sex, which is an opinion I would not disagree with. Right, well, now the time has come for us to take up this subject of how the sex game is actually played between males and females, and how the postulates actually work in the sex game. It's necessary to know this to understand just what's going on. Usually the game is originated by the male in amongst humans. It's not common in all life forms. Amongst humans, the male, it usually starts with the male. He puts out his must sex postulate. It starts on, he directs this towards the female of his choice. And she's, upon sensing this postulate, will immediately go into a mustn't be sexed mode. Now, as soon as she does this, of course, sexual sensation will generate at the boundary between the two postulates, because they're opposition postulates. So we have him pursuing her, he's saying must sex, and she's saying mustn't be sexed, and she's being pursued. And that goes on. The two things that can happen there, the most common thing is that in the initial stages is that the female must be very, very careful not to overdo her mustn't be sex postulate, because in the initial stages, if she pushes that postulate too hard, she'll drive the male from his must sex postulate over into his mustn't sex postulate, in which case he'll lose interest in her. The situation will then be that she's in mustn't be sex and he's in mustn't sex, and of course they're complementary postulates, and there's no sexual sensation being generated, and the game stops. You see, so the female has to watch that, and if it happens, of course, if it does happen that she overdoes her mustn't be sex postulate and drives him into mustn't sex, then she must immediately and will immediately switch over to her must be sex postulate. She'll switch over to her must be sex postulate and give the come hither sign, and this will resurrect his flagging interest now, because sexual sensation is again being generated between the female's must be sex postulate and his mustn't sex postulate. So he, again, the sexual interest there, sexual sensation being generated, he will see her come hither and start to pursue again. As soon as he starts pursuing again, he goes into his must be sex, he goes into his must sex postulate. And of course, as soon as she senses this, she will go back into her mustn't be sex postulate again. And so that is the full cycle that goes on there. That's courting. That's the courting play between the sexes, the interplay of the male between using his must sex and mustn't sex postulate, and the female using her mustn't be sexed and must be sex postulate. The two are used so that the idea is to optimise the game so that sexual sensation is always being generated between them. The tendency is, because the gain, there's always conflict between their postulates, is that the distance tends to close up there, so the two tend to get closer and closer together. And all going well, the courting goes well, they get closer and closer and closer together until there's actually physical contact occurs. But still the same postulate structure occurs. The male goes into must sex, the female will go into mustn't be sexed. And if she overdoes it and he goes into mustn't sex, then she will go into must be sexed. And then he will go back from mustn't sex into must sex again, and she will go back into mustn't sex. So the postulates are always conflicting. As long as you bear in mind that the postulates are always conflicting, and that the male moves between must sex and mustn't sex, and she moves between must be sex and mustn't be sex, and then you've got it. You understand it, as long as you realise that they're both striving for conflicting postulates. And so the mystery of this strange courting dance between males and females is understood in terms of postulates. You can trace it out, you can, and you'll see that it is exactly as I say it is. When physical contact occurs, eventually we get to the point where actual coitus is embarked upon, but still we get the same pattern of postulates. The male's must sex postulate now becomes a forward pelvic thrust with his penis, with his erected penis, becomes a forward pelvic thrust, and the female goes into a mustn't be sex postulate, which is a forward sexual withdrawal. Then the male goes into a backward pelvic withdrawal, that's his withdrawal of mustn't sex. That's a backward pelvic withdrawal. The female, while he's in that mode, will go into her must be sexed, which is a backward pelvic thrust. And so you see that you still see the same cycle. The postulates are still in opposition to each other, but now we're entered into a bodily level. We have the male, his must sex postulate now translates into a forward pelvic thrust, and his mustn't sex postulate translates into a backward pelvic withdrawal. The female's must be sex postulate translates into a backward pelvic thrust, and her mustn't be sex postulate translates into a forward sexual withdrawal. The tendency, of course, as the terminals get closer and closer and they engage in the coitus starts, is for the game to more and more sexual sensation to be generated, and for the game to become more and more frantic, until the point of orgasm is reached. Now, orgasm is a definite point on the cycle, and it has a definite postulate structure, which you should know about, the structure of orgasm. Now, a male goes into orgasm when he deprives the female of her mustn't be sexed postulate and drives her into must be sexed. He uses his must sex postulate to deprive her of her mustn't be sexed postulate and drive her into must be sexed. When he considers this has occurred, it's purely a subjective consideration, when he considers this has occurred, he will go into orgasm. The female goes into orgasm when, by the use of her must be sex postulate, she deprives the male of his mustn't sex postulate and drives him into must sex. And when she considers she's done this, she too will go into orgasm. And the partners can actually working between them when they're skilled at the subject, so they both achieve orgasm at the same moment. It needs a little bit of practice, but most couples usually manage to do this, that they can both achieve orgasm at the same moment. But there is the postulate structure. The male orgasm is a question of depriving the female of her must-be sex postulate, then he will go into orgasm, and the female goes into orgasm when she considers she's deprived the male of his must sex postulate, and he's driven into must sex, and then she will go into orgasm. So there's this mysterious subject of orgasm and its postulate structure. Well, you'd say, so far so good. How is it that we're in a difficult subject? I mean, how come this doesn't come apart routinely? You know, it ought to come apart. We seem to have it all straight. Well, there's one or two little flies in the ointment. And the first of them is that the first peculiarity, and maybe you've spotted it already, is in these bodily motions on the subject of sex, these pelvic thrusts. Now, the human beings have adopted over the millennia face-to-face coitus, which is a most peculiar position for them to complete the sex act. If you go back to their nearest ancestors, the apes, the chimps, and so forth, the chimp, male chimp, mounts the female from behind, and this is very common in all mammals, that the male mounts the female from behind. But in human beings, this used to happen in humans too, but for the last few millennia, they've adopted the front-to-front coital position as the more common, although it still can be practiced. Mounting the female from behind, it can still be practiced, and is practiced by humans, but nevertheless the more common position, known as the missionary position, I believe, is the male and the female both facing each other front to front. But let's consider the ape for a moment. An ape. Now, a male ape, all his sex life would be in front of him. Peculiarity of a male ape. Now, he shares this with the male human, that all the male human sex life is in front of him. When he looks out, the sex is occurring in front of him, because he's always, the female is always in front of the male in the sexual position. So it's true for an ape and it's true for a human. So human male and a male ape, all his sex life is in front of him. But the female ape, she is mounted from behind. And it's only a fairly recently in human history that front-to-front copulation has occurred amongst human beings. There's far many millennia that females were entered from behind, genetically, on the genetic track. So the female, still the human female, in common with the female ape, all her sex life happens behind her. Nothing happens in front of her. If she's entered sexually, she's always entered from behind. And this is why the motions of the female, of the to be sexed and to not be sexed, the pelvic thrusts are in terms of a rear. The female, remember what I said in coitus between the male and the female, the female to be set must be sex postulate is a backward pelvic thrust, which makes a lot of sense if the male is behind her, but makes no sense at all if the male is facing her from the front. But nevertheless, it still applies to human females. They still retain their ape ancestry on this subject, and that in terms of physical efforts on the body, that a human female, the actual physical effort of must be sexed is a backward pelvic thrust, and mustn't be sexed on the physiological level is a forward physical withdrawal. She still has interprets that her sex life all happens behind her, the female does, even though she engages in front-to-front coitus. Now you ought to know that, otherwise you don't understand these physical motions of these pelvic thrusts and the way they work together. Now, you remember I said early on that the game play is compulsive in the to sex goals package in humans. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, the to sex postulate is identical to the to not be sex postulate, and the to be sex postulate is identical to the to not sex postulate in terms of the set. And we see this identification very, very clearly when we get to the physiological efforts in coitus amongst humans. The, for example, the female must be sexed is a backward pelvic thrust. But in terms of pure musculature, that is exactly the same as the male mustn't sex, which is a backward pelvic withdrawal. There isn't any difference between a backward pelvic withdrawal and a backward pelvic thrust. They are identical in terms of muscular action. So the female's muscular action in her must be sex postulate is identical to the male's muscular action in his mustn't sex postulate. They're identical. And similarly, the male with his forward pelvic thrust of must sex is exactly identical in terms of muscular action to the female's forward pelvic withdrawal. There's no difference between a forward pelvic thrust and a forward pelvic withdrawal. call one way or the other, but they're identical in terms of muscular action. So you see what I mean, that when I say the human body, the games play is completely compulsive. The postulates at a muscular, physiological level are identical in action, in motion, and so forth. You follow? So the games play, as far as the human body is concerned, to sex is a compulsive games condition. The identification is complete there. Now, what is the identification between in the compulsive games play between the genders? We see the identification between the postulates. Well, the identification between the gender is that a male equals a non-female and a female equals a non-male. They are the identifications. Male equals non-female, female equals non-male. That's just simply another way of expressing the concept of that to sex equals to not be sexed, and to be sexed equals to not sex. It's just another way of expressing it in terms of when you consider that that these junior universes of masculinity and femininity only consist of the postulates that I've mentioned. They only consist of postulates, of the to sex postulates. You write this down on the piece of paper, you'll see immediately that that is the identification of the genders, is that a male masculinity is non-femininity and femininity is non-masculinity. It's cute, isn't it? So when I say that there's an identification in the to sex goals package, a false identification there in compulsive games play, I can prove it. I can prove it at the physiological level, the muscular contractions which the human bodies undergo during the sex act. The contractions, there's an identification between the contractions there. So there's the proof. There's the proof. So this is not just an airy-fairy, something all up in the air that I happen to dream up one bright afternoon while thinking about the subject. No, no. There's definite evidence to back up what I'm saying. When I say there's a false identification in the to sex goals package in the subject of humans, and that games play is compulsive in that package at a bodily level, regardless of the psychological level. In other words, you can erase this goals package, the sex goals package, psychologically, and your body will still be in a compulsive games condition on the subject of sex. You can't do anything about that. It's the way the creature's built. It's built in. You won't do anything about that, which is the following next important datum to understand, that although you can erase this subject psychologically and understand it completely and understand fully what's going on, you will not change your body one iota on the subject. Nor should you even attempt to try. You'll only upset the body. Because the body, that's the way the body is, that's the way the body's designed, that's the way the body's built. It's built that way, and that's the way it is. That's the way the mock-up is. And you're not going to, all you'll do, you'll only ruin its health if you try and muck about with it. So just leave it alone. Just erase the ghost package for you and understand the body and understand its peculiarities on the subject of sex and its peculiarities on the subject of compulsive games playing. That's the sex ghost package. Well, you still might say, well, where's the trouble? Why won't it all come apart rather easily if it is just as you say? Well, I wish it were as simple as I've just said it, but there's a little more. There's one other fly in the ointment, and it's a rather a nasty fly, and which does really muck the whole thing up and make it very, very difficult to take part. And make the whole subject very, very confusing. Let's go into it, and we now know enough about the subject of sex to tackle this peculiarity in the human body. It's a purely physiological peculiarity of the human being. It doesn't apply to all animals, it applies to many, but it certainly applies to humans, to the human animal, to the human body. Now, when a person, as I say, the human body either comes in male or it comes in female. Now, if it's a male body, it has testicles and a system for producing male sperm, and it has a penis, which is a device for delivering the sperm, and it has the ability to erect the penis when it's mature to get the sperm into the female. It has all this equipment there, and this equipment starts off in early childhood, even in very early childhood, has a positive to sex ionization. It's there permanently in the body. Now, it's not there permanently in all mammals, simply because some mammals, and you might say, I'm not absolutely sure of this because I'm not all that good on the subject of animals, I'm not a biologist, but some animals, many animals, come into the sexual season and go out like dogs do. Dogs aren't in season all year round. They only have a mating season. Cats only have a certain mating season. So for most of the year, they're simply not interested in sex, dogs and cats. But they have a certain mating season where they become quite frantic on the subject of sex and copulate and have their young, and then it's all over and done with, and the rest of the year they're not interested anymore. Well, human beings aren't like that. Well, during the mating season with animals, their bodies ionize sexually. They get a sexual ionization on their gender parts. But human beings, they're in sexual season all year round. So their genitals areas are sexually ionized permanently 365 days a year and 366 days on leap years. All the year round, you see, there's a sexual ionization. And what is the sexual ionization? Well, in the male, the penis, testicles, that area is permanently ionized with a to sex postulate, the plus to sex postulate. It's faint at birth, it increases in childhood slowly, and jumps in puberty. And from puberty onwards, it's quite intense, and it's there all the time. It never goes away. It's there. It doesn't reverse. It's there all the time. It increases as sexual excitement increases. When a male has an erection, there's a much more intense positive ion to sex ionization in the genital area than when his penis is inert. It can go down almost zero when it's inert, but it's always plus. It's never zero. It's always plus. Similarly with the female, she has in the area of the vagina. Her vagina is chronically ionized to be sexed. Got a chronic to be sexed ionization. It can become intense when she goes into sexual play, or it can fade out to almost nothing when she's at rest. But it's never at zero. It's always plus. It never goes minus. It's always plus there. So that is something that that you have to know about the human body, is that it has a permanent ionization. Right, so far so good. Is that all on the subject of ionization? Well, if that was all, we wouldn't have any trouble. We could get this gold package apart. It would be a piece of cake if that was the only ionization. but unfortunately it isn't. It's a strange thing that human bodies, gender in humans, doesn't occur. If you talk to a physiologist and you look at a prenatal child, it only gender occurs about the second week in the prenatal period. Prior to that, there was no sign of any gender. Then about 2 weeks on, gender, the male fetus starts to produce penis and testicles, and the female body starts to produce a vagina and female sex cells and so forth, and the male also produces male sex cells. You may not know this, but even young children have the male. A young boy will have male sex cells. He hasn't got many, but he's still got some male sun sperm in the testicles. He still has some male sex cells, and even a young girl has a collection of female sex cells in the ovaries, but they're not in any position to be fertilized or to move into the womb or what have you. Neither is the boy in any position to ejaculate these sperm. This has to wait until puberty occurs. But you should know that the sex cells are present even at birth in humans, although they're not there in anywhere near the quantities that they will be later on in life. Okay, well, so far so good. But what is this fly in the ointment? Well, that's the way it goes prenatally. But unfortunately, we get this child, it's conceived, it starts off as two cells, and as a two-cell split become four cells, and after 2 weeks there's thousands and thousands of cells, and then suddenly they go into gender. But, and this is the sleeper in the pack, this is the one you have to know, and this is the one that causes all the trouble. There is a residual ionization of the other gender in any gender. In other words, a male not only has quite a strong ionization of must sex in the area of his penis and testicles, but he has a very faint feminine ionization in the area of the vagina, which he doesn't have. It's ridiculous, isn't it? In other words, although the body tries its hardest to separate the males and the females completely, it doesn't quite succeed. And there is always some residual ionization of the other gender in all bodies. Similarly with the female, she will have a strong must be sexed ionization in her vagina, but she has a very faint must sex ionization in her vestigial penis, which is her clitoris. So she too has the residual male sexuality there. It's more obvious in the female because she does actually have a vestigial penis, a clitoris. The male has no vestigial vagina, but he still has the residual female ionization in that area of the body, around the area of the buttocks. And this is always very puzzling to all males. They don't understand it, and it's very, very puzzling to them. But it shows up in therapy, and you best understand that it's a very, very natural phenomena. It varies from male to male and female to female. I mean, some males have, all males have a strong to sex ionization in the area of their genitals, penis, and testicles. But some have a very weak must be sexed ionization in the area of their buttocks. Others have quite a strong one, quite strong residual there. Similarly with the females, some females have a very, very faint must sex ionization in the clitoris, and other females have quite a strong one. And this is the basis of homosexuality in males and lesbianism in females. If the ionization becomes too strong, this residual ionization becomes too strong, the person can actually sexually become the opposite sex. In other words, a male with a very powerful sexual to be sexed ionization in the area of the vagina he doesn't have, and all around the area of his buttocks, can easily adopt a female role in sex with another male, and not do any male sexing at all, and purely occupy a female role, and become a homosexual. Similarly, a female with a very high positive ionization, male ionization in her clitoris, can start pursuing other females sexually and to become a lesbian. It explains lesbianism in females and it explains homosexuality in males. Now, this is a quite unnatural phenomena. It's not psychological, it's not a psychological phenomena, it's purely a physiological phenomena, and it's not anything that can be changed by therapy. You just buy this when you buy the mock-up. It's a part of the way the body is built. And I've researched all around this area very, very thoroughly, and I can assure you that it's not changeable. You follow that? That ionization there, your body ionization, is fixed, pretty well fixed from birth onwards. There's nothing much you can do about it except drive yourself crazy. Many men, realizing that the back part of their body's got a slight feminine ionization, it worries them half to death. They think they're homosexual, and they then go on a great rampage of trying to prove their sexuality. They start beating up females, they become an absolute bloody menace, and all they're doing, they're making themselves and everybody around them miserable, because they can't change it. It isn't going to change, and they might as well accept the fact that it's a part of their physiological nature. And similarly with a female. So, when you come across homosexuals and lesbians and so forth, realise that it's a physiological function you're dealing with here. And although it can be helped by therapy, you're not going to change that physiological ionisation of their body. But you can erase the to sex goals package, and you have to erase the to sex goals package to get them to understand what is going on. Nobody's going to understand what is going on until they've erased the to sex goals package in therapy. When they've got it erased, they'll understand exactly what is going on, and before they've got it erased, they'll have difficulty with it. So the trick is to erase the to sex goals package in therapy. It will erase. And knowing this background data, what I've given you on this tape, it will help the erasure. Now, the final thing you should know on this subject of ionization is that because of the body split between males and females, is that the male usually occupies the front of his body there, and he regards this, the penis and the genitals and so forth, testicles, the must sex area of ionization, he regards it in the class of self. The bit behind him, the area of the vagina he doesn't have, buttocks and so forth, which is ionized, must be sexed, more or less, with greater or lesser ionization of that, he regards in the class of not-self. He can't have them both in the class of self, because the sex goals package is in a state of compulsive games play. Because masculinity equals non-femininity, and femininity equals non-masculinity. So they can't both be in the same, they can't both be in the class of self. So the male tends to retreat to the front of his body and regards as this little bit of feminine ionization behind, at the back of him, as in the class of not self. The female tends to retreat to the back of her body, and she regards her powerful must be sexed ionization in the class of self, and she tends to regard this very faint must sex ionization in the clitoris as in the class of not self. She puts that over that way. Now, all genders do this. All males and females do this. They can't have both these ionizations both in the class of self. If one of them's in the class of self, then the other one's in the class of not self, and so on, at a physiological level. Psychologically, of course, you can erase the whole package. You can occupy the must sex and must be sex posture simultaneously. You see that? But the body can't do it. So if you're going to go into the body and occupy the body universe, then, of course, and you're going to be a male, then your residual female ionisation is going to be in the class of not self. And if you're a female, and you're going to go into the female universe of the body, then the residual male ionisation in your clitoris is going to be in the class of not self. And this is inevitable, simply because the body has adopted gender specialisation. And that is the trouble. Now, if you follow everything I've given you all the data now, on the physiologically and sufficiently to get it apart, and I've given you the hot gen, I've given you the works there. There's enough bugs in this to make it almost impossible to get apart. I mean, poor old Sigmund Freud, he spent his whole life trying to get it apart, and he didn't even discover the sex postulates. He didn't even know the girls' package. So, of course, he got absolutely nowhere. But it was a valiant try. I mean, one must give him full marks for trying, but he never even discovered the girls' package. But even his was a valiant, even he made advances on what was known before. I mean, he did well, but he never got the first base. And but now we've got it. We've got the whole gruesome, giddy story out on the subject of sex. There, we have the girls' package. We have the compulsive games play in the body, and we have the human spirit can play this game too. The human spirit can erase it. We have these body ionizations, and we have the game, and so forth, and the residual ionizations. And how they affect the game. And if you can put all that lot together and see it, then it'll help you a lot. But you can't erase the sex goals package in therapy. Another couple of points I'll go into rather briefly. Subject of gender symbols, you'll find that you'll have difficulty erasing gender symbols. Gender symbols are symbols that represent gender. They're usually clothes, in other words, like say a male clothes. A male wears certain types of clothes, and they are become male gender symbols. Females wear certain types of clothes, skirts and so forth. Skirt is a female gender symbol. Trousers are a male gender symbol, and so on. And these gender symbols, you will have a lot of trouble erasing them at level 5C. Until you've erased the sex goals package at level 5B. So don't muck about with them. You won't get them erased at 5C until you've erased the sex goals package. Once you've erased the sex goals package at level 5B, all the gender symbols will erase routinely. They're simply because the gender symbols, they've got an ionization. Every gender symbol's got an ionization of one or more of the postulates of the sex goals package. And while that goals package is alive and unerased, you'll never erase the gender symbol. Never, never in a month of Sundays will you erase it. The trick is to erase the sex goals package. When you've got that erased, all the gender symbols will erase like lambs. You can erase them at 5C. They'll all stand up and nod and be erased and wish you goodbye on their way. They'll all go out of the mind very, very easily and very, very quickly. So much for gender symbols. That's the only thing you need to know about them is don't burn the midnight oil trying to muck about erasing gender symbols at level 5C until you've erased the sex goals package at level 5B. The thing is, the subject of briefly sexual modesty. I've just got a little brief note on the subject of sexual modesty. Because the ionization is chronic of in the human body, and it's always positive, it's rather offensive to the being, to the spiritual being. So he always tends to cover up the area of the genitals. In order to get the postulate out of the positive into the negative. In other words, a male's got a positively ionized must sex. His penis is positively ionized must sex. Well, he gets fed up with this. So what he'll do, he'll cover it up And the thing he covers the up, he ionises with mustn't sex, you see. Now he's retained his freedom of choice. Similarly with a female, she will cover up the area of the vagina and her buttocks there, which are ionised must be sex. She'll cover this up with a skirt and so forth. Then she can ionise the skirt mustn't be sexed, and she regains her freedom of choice. And it helps her in sexual games play. When she hasn't got any clothes on, it's very, very difficult for her to change the ionisation, because the body's got a fixed ionisation. So you'll find that humans prefer to have clothes on in sexual games play, because it allows them to play the sex games more easily, because of the fixed ionisation of their body gender parts. Follow that? So this is the basis of sexual modesty. There's no great mystery about it. It's a very, very natural thing, very natural. Now, everything I've said on this tape, or put it another way, there's nothing I've said on this tape which changes in any way the way you run the To Sex Goals package in therapy. You run the To Sex Goals package exactly as I've stated so far. There's no change at all. You run it exactly the way I've said in the write-up. None of this data changes it in the slightest. This is background data, which you'll find of inestimable value once you start playing with the To Sex Goals package at level 5B. You'll suddenly be working with the package, and then something will happen and you think, oh Christ, yes, Dennis mentioned that on the tape, yes, now I understand, yeah, I can see what's going on here. And if you hadn't got this little bit of data, you'd be floundering around and wondering what the hell was going on. When you've got the data, it will come apart easily. You'll have a much easier trip erasing that To Sex Goals package than I had, I can assure you. Because I had all this phenomena show up, and I had to figure out what the hell was going on too. You don't have to do this, I've done it for you. So you should have a rather easy trip on the To Sex Goals package. I've taken all the bugs out for you. So, well, that's about it, Greg. This, no doubt, is the, apart from the To Know Goals package, the fundamental To Know Goals package, To Know, which of course is the toughest one of all to erase, that the sex will run at a close second. But only because of the gender specialisation of the human body and the peculiar sexual ionisation of the human bodies. That's the only reason why it's a toughie. Once you understand these ionisations, you've extracted the teeth out of the To Sex Goals package in therapy you have, and it should erase rather easily. But nevertheless, it is the second most difficult one to erase. It is a toughie, and I can assure you, there's no other way to take the subject of sex apart in humans than to erase that goals package. There isn't any other way to do it. It just simply cannot be done. You've got to get that package erased. When you've got the package erased, you've done it. And until you've got the package erased, you haven't done it. And the package is erasable. I can assure you it's erasable, because I've done it. But even when you've got the package erased, your body will still contain its sexual peculiarities and its sexual ionisations and so forth. It won't change those in the slightest. You'll just have to learn to live with them. But at least you'll understand them, and they won't bother you anymore. Okay? Right, we'll leave it at that. We're coming up to the end of the tape, so I'll post this off to you when I know you're back from your holiday. So, bye bye for now.